In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Wednesday, May 8th, 2013 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. First of all, my thanks to my colleague Jared Serbu for filling in for me quite ably over the last couple of days. Jared is back on assignment, and we'll report to you about Defense Department issues later on in the program today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Today in the 3 o'clock hour, as we do every Wednesday at 3, it is Pentagon Solutions on In-Depth with Francis Rose. And today you're hearing remarks from Deputy Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter speaking at the National Press Club yesterday about the status of DOD budget and the fiscal challenges that lie ahead for his agency. In the first highlight, he takes a look at the department's future by looking at the ghost of budgets past.
1 month ago, it was now, Secretary Hagel gave a speech at the National Defense University that described the major strategic and budgetary challenges that and choices and also opportunities that we as a defense enterprise face. And I'd like to pick up where he left off and what will in one of what will undoubtedly be a series of discussions that extend over the spring and summer as we in the Defense Department with the Congress work together to try to put a stable and solid foundation under the strategic transition that we are embarked upon as a nation. As President Obama made clear in the new defense strategy we announced last January, we're turning a corner, a strategic corner. From a post-9/11 era dominated by two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan to the challenges and opportunities that will define our future in security. We know what many of those challenges are. Continued turmoil in the Middle East, the persistent threat of terrorism, enduring threats like weapons of mass destruction, and new threats like cyber. We also see great opportunities. Among them, the opportunity to shift the great weight of the Department of Defense, both physical and intellectual, that has been devoted to Iraq and Afghanistan to the Asia-Pacific region, where America will continue to play its seven-decade-old pivotal stabilizing role into the future. To develop innovative new capabilities from a vibrant defense technology base. To capitalize on the lessons of the last decade on how to use forces innovatively, including special forces and the integration of intelligence and operations. To manage presence in new ways. To leverage the reserve and guard components that have performed so superbly over the last decade. And to build the capacity of partners and allies so that they can shoulder more of the burden. This great strategic transition, which we need to make, coincides with the need to absorb some reductions in defense spending in the interest of the nation's overall fiscal situation. These two great historical currents are coming together. And it's my view that they can, if managed properly, reinforce one another. That's the task before us in the Department of Defense. In terms of our responsibility to the American taxpayer, we know that in making this strategic transition, we only deserve the amount of money we need and not the amount of money we're used to. That's why, well before the current budget turmoil, we made reductions to the department's budget by $487 billion over 10 years. This half-trillion-dollar adjustment came on top of significant adjustments that Secretary Gates made to eliminate unneeded or underperforming acquisition programs. Now, at the same time, our overseas contingency operations funding, which is not included in the base budget, and which is largely for Iraq and Afghanistan, otherwise known as wartime supplemental funding, is also decreasing. Now that we have exited Iraq and are drawing down our forces in Afghanistan. Taken together, these reductions compare in pace and magnitude to historical cycles in defense spending the nation has experienced in the past, after Vietnam and after the Cold War. In order to execute the President's defense strategy and to responsibly prepare for reductions in defense spending, we need to continue a relentless effort to make every defense dollar count. I began this effort in acquisition when I was the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology and Logistics under the title Better Buying Power that continues under my successor, Frank Kendall. Extended throughout the entire department, this means making hard choices and persuading our own bureaucracy and ultimately the Congress to support even the very hardest of them.
That is Ashton Carter, the Deputy Secretary of Defense, talking about the status of DOD's budget and the fiscal challenges they're facing at the National Press Club yesterday. You'll hear more about new acquisition strategies from Secretary Carter when we come back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're supposed to be at the Jones hearing this morning. That bill is important to us.
I was there all morning.
Wait a second. Sally said you picked up your lab results from the doctor this morning.
I did. I got all of my lab results, asked my doctor a question, and ordered two prescription refills. But I never left the hearing.
How did you do that?
Kaiser Permanente.
Hmm.
They send lab results electronically.
Huh.
I can also email my doctor's office and order most prescription refills electronically.
No kidding.
While I was in the Senate hearing, I even made a follow-up appointment for next week at their new care center by Union Station.
Tom, you did all of that from your cell phone?
Yep, from the hearing room.
Huh.
That's why I joined Kaiser Permanente. They're probably the most electronically connected care team in the country. Plus, they have great quality and service ratings. I checked them out on the NCQA website. So relax. I never left the hearing room, and I had it all covered.
I never doubted you for a second, Tom.
Kaiser Permanente, the future of healthcare today.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
At BAE Systems, we always focus on keeping troops safe. One challenge military pilots face, it's called a brownout. When helicopter pilots confront dust storms or fog, the risk of collision is much higher. That's why we created a technology that lets pilots see terrain and obstacles through these conditions. Knowing our work helps to save lives inspires us every day. We'll be there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at baesystems.com/nextfront.
MilitaryByOwner.com. When duty calls, they can help.
When my husband got orders to PCS to Jacksonville, we only had 2 months to sell our home near Quantico and find housing near our new base. We were overwhelmed. No, make that panicked. I'm happy to report we've checked into our new duty station, our daughter is enrolled in school, and we're settled into the perfect home that we found on MilitaryByOwner.com.
Military by Owner. Find, sell, or rent housing near any U.S. military base. Homes advertised by homeowners and real estate agents.
Here's Ray Brown, Division Chief for Enterprise Server Operations Center's U.S. Department of State on the Federal Executive Forum on Virtualization and Data Center Consolidation, sponsored by Juniper Networks.
Network security, perimeter security is a high priority issue for us, and it's an important issue because as we grow in our capacity to offer citizen services and diplomacy throughout the world, that network, external network access is growing.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com. The federal data center is evolving as agencies deploy scalable computing on demand. Are you confident your network will keep pace? Can your agency infrastructure leverage the benefits of cloud computing, virtualization, and big data analysis today? It's time to understand what your future data center can do. Let Juniper Federal Networking Professionals show you options for performance, scalability, security, and cost-effective data center solutions. Learn how Juniper can help you build the best. Visit juniper.net/data center.
I'm Emily Kopp. On Thursday's Federal Drive, we explore what some call the next battle frontier, cybersecurity. Former Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff tells us what the U.S. should be doing about China's cyber warriors. GSA's Justin Herman explains what to do if your Twitter account is hacked. And former Customs and Border Protection cyber official Alma Cole joins us too. Starts at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And check out federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to Pentagon Solutions on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. You're hearing highlights today of a presentation from the Deputy Secretary of Defense, Ashton Carter. He was at the National Press Club to talk about the status of DOD's budget and the fiscal challenges his agency faces. In this highlight, he maps out some new acquisition strategies, and he says DOD's made some important changes to control costs.
Like setting targets for what systems should cost. A notion we are applying to the Joint Strike Fighter, the Ohio-class replacement missile submarine, and the new strategic bomber. To avoid outcomes like the VH-71 presidential helicopter, which ballooned to the point where it became unaffordable. We also gave renewed emphasis, where appropriate, to greater use of fixed-price contracts, an approach that we applied to the KCX, now the KC-46, aerial refueling tanker competition. We also learned from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan hard-earned lessons in speed and agility. We delivered the mine-resistant, ambush-protected all-terrain vehicle, MRAP ATV, which went from commander's need to production and fielding in less than 10 months, largely bypassing the ponderous acquisition system. Of course, the most important savings achieved through the MRAP program were in lives saved and the devastating injuries avoided, something that's truly priceless. Outside of acquisition, there are many other areas in which we simply must do better. Making better use of taxpayer dollars is important not only in its own right, since every dollar that's wasted could be used for the nation's defense, but is also important in order to win the taxpayers' confidence that they are getting full value for their defense dollar. This is a confidence we must earn to get the public and Congress to support a reasonable level of defense spending, such as the President's budget contains. And for this reason, I begin, as the Department's entire leadership begins, with driving down tail to strengthen tooth. In this regard, we are placing a great emphasis on reducing the cost of what we in the Pentagon call the Fourth Estate, which consists of the Office of the Secretary of Defense, the Joint Staff, the staffs of the combatant commanders, and the defense agencies. The Fourth Estate represents a fifth of the Department's budget, and it merits at least as much scrutiny as the military services budgets. There are real savings to be realized here. Next, we must drive down health care costs across the department. We have achieved substantial reductions in recent years, largely by holding down costs we spend to buy pharmaceuticals and pay health care providers, but also through modest increases in fees and copays assessed to beneficiaries. As a result of these and other efforts, our fiscal year 2014 budget request for the Defense Health Program at $49 billion is more than $3 billion lower than the fiscal year 2012 enacted level of $53 billion. In contrast, health care spending in the broader economy continues to grow faster than the overall rate of inflation. But we need to do more. And to that end, we must look at ways to make more efficient use of beds, staffing, and facilities at military treatment facilities, and again at health care fees. We also need to restructure our civilian workforce as we restructure our fighting forces. Specifically, we plan to reduce civilian workforce levels by between 5 and 6% over the next five fiscal years. These reductions are largely proportional to military end strength reductions that we've proposed. Because they are contingent, in large part, upon our ability to consolidate our infrastructure and restructure our military treatment facilities, We will need a BRAC round to achieve them. Given this connection, we are submitting our request to Congress for a BRAC round in 2015. As Secretary Hagel recently testified before Congress, we believe BRAC is a comprehensive and fair tool that allows communities a role in reuse decisions for their property and provides redevelopment assistance. BRAC requires an upfront investment, and for that reason, the Future Year Defense Program adds $2.4 billion to pay for these costs. But in the long term, BRAC rounds have consistently generated significant savings. The previous five rounds of BRAC are saving $12 billion annually, and those savings will continue. Now, I realize BRAC is not exactly a crowd pleaser, and people often say to me, how can you propose that? And our answer really is, how can we not propose that? How can we not propose the cutting of tail and only the cutting of tooth? Finally, everyone who looks at the defense budget realizes that military compensation, like health care costs, cannot grow at unsustainable rates without threatening the force. We are therefore resubmitting a new package of military compensation proposals that we believe address congressional concerns raised last year. None of these new proposals would result in a reduction in pay or benefits. They simply reduce the rate of growth. Specifically, we are proposing a modest reduction in the growth of military pay by implementing a 1% pay raise for service members in fiscal year 2014 and a modest additional increase in TRICARE fees and pharmacy copays, as I alluded to above. Where applicable, these fee and copay increases would be phased in and have maximum limits to allow service members and retirees to adjust accordingly, and they would be grandfathered if appropriate.
That's Ashton Carter, the Deputy Secretary of Defense, talking at the National Press Club yesterday about the status of DOD's budget, the fiscal challenges his agency's dealing with. When we come back, more about new acquisition strategies from him on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
I'm John Friedman. Please join me this Saturday at 10 a.m. for Power of Attorney here on 1500 AM. This week, my guest will be Cliff Snyder, Executive Vice President and General Counsel of No More RAC, and Chris Mead, Founder and CEO of Genetipet. Power of Attorney is sponsored by Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Reston, Virginia, serving clients throughout the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area and across the country. For more information about the show, visit us on the web at powerofattorneyradio.com.
This facial recognition and lack of privacy is going to be a problem on an ongoing basis. Now, coming up in the future, you're going to see face recognition technology on ATMs, which actually is a pretty good
idea. That's a great idea.
I love that idea. They're also going to have face recognition software on mobile devices. So the device is going to look at your face, and instead of you putting in a code to unlock it, if it doesn't see you, it's not going to unlock.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
This week's Experts in Health topic is Healthy Aging Tips, featuring Dr. Van Zoren, an internal medicine provider with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group who practices at Kaiser Permanente's Capitol Hill Medical Center.
Getting older is a natural part of life. If you take good care of your body and learn positive ways to deal with stress, you can slow down or even prevent problems that often come with aging. Here are a few tips to help you be your best as you get older. One of the most important things you can do for your health is physical activity. This can be anything from gardening to taking a walk to working out at the gym. To protect or improve your memory and mental sharpness, keep your brain active and challenged. For example, attend an educational workshop or learn a new card game. Eat a healthy, balanced diet. A low-salt, low-fat diet with plenty of fruits, vegetables, and fiber can actually reduce your age-related risks of heart disease, diabetes, stroke, osteoporosis, and other chronic diseases.
Dr. Van Zoren was recognized as a super doctor by the Washington Post in 2012. For more information, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees.
Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Heart Health Mobile. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Managing your heart health can be done in the palm of your hand. Just ask the Marshfield Clinic Research Foundation. It developed an app as part of a challenge from the Million Hearts Initiative. Million Hearts aims to prevent 1 million heart attacks and strokes by 2017. Dr. Simon Lin is the project leader.
Heart Health Mobile tracks users' heart disease and stroke risk factors. User enters statistics such as height, weight, cholesterol levels, and blood pressure.
It then monitors your progress. It also asks you questions.
Do you smoke? Do you have diabetes?
The app lets you find locations near you where you can get blood pressure and cholesterol screenings, and you can share your progress with your friends and followers on Facebook and Twitter. Learn more at millionhearts.hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight is DC CAP. Did you know that since 1999, DC CAP has worked to double the number of district students who enroll in college and triple the number who graduate? Join DC CAP in its mission to give every DC public and public charter high school student a chance at a college education. Support DC CAP in assisting more DC students today. For more info, visit federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio charities are fed by Papa John's.
You're dedicated to your agency's mission. And at Federal News Radio, we're dedicated to making that mission easier. We give you access to the people, policy, and programs that affect you every day from the voices that matter most. Hear for yourself. Federal CIO Stephen Van Rokel.
The mentality of let's cut the bottom of our list off, the things that are least effective, that are maybe duplicative, and let's take part of that and let's feed the top of the list. We can invest in innovation. We can invest in cost savings, efficiency, and effectiveness of our employees or services that touch citizens.
Former DOD Chief Information Assurance Officer Robert Lentz.
The CIO is really the focal point in an information age business. Unfortunately, they oftentimes get trivialized to just manage the IT budget. In fact, I think the CIO has actually lost influence and power.
In your car, online, on the go on your mobile device, Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. New research is showing that people with depression may not get the full benefits of healthy behaviors.
We know that physical activity or leisure time physical activity is often recommended for improving your cardiac health and your reduction of weight and improvement of overall mental health.
Dr. Edward Suarez is an NIH-funded researcher at Duke University.
We've also known that those individuals who drink light to moderately are at much lower risk for type 2 diabetes.
But findings suggest that depression could be a complicating risk factor for heart disease. For details, visit www.nhlbi.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by NIH, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now your Federal News Radio cybersecurity update brought to you by CenturyLink. Afternoons at 30 minutes after the hour. Your agency will soon have new marching orders on certifying and accrediting security on your computer systems. The Office of Management and Budget's drafting a memo to move agencies out of the once every 3-year process under the Federal Information Security Management Act. The goal of the memo is to implement the concept of ongoing authorizations, that concept outlined originally in the fiscal 2012 FISMA guidance agencies received in September. You get your cybersecurity update every weekday afternoon at 30 minutes after the hour, brought to you by CenturyLink. We continue now on Pentagon Solutions on In-Depth with Francis Rose, with comments from Deputy Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter, speaking at the National Press Club yesterday about DOD's budget and the fiscal challenges his agency is dealing with. In this highlight, he says DOD's making a strong effort to match the Obama administration's fiscal strategy with DOD policy.
Just as we are redoubling our efforts in fiscal year 2014 to obtain greater efficiencies in defense spending, we're also deepening our program alignment to the president's strategy. Let me remind you what the key tenets of that strategy are. The first is that as we draw down from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, our force needs to be to make a very difficult transition from a large, rotational, counterinsurgency-based force to a leaner, more agile, more flexible, and ready force for the future. That's not to say there's anything wrong with the force that we built for Iraq and Afghanistan. It was the right force for the period. But this is a different period. As we make this transition, we want to preserve what we've worked so hard to achieve in the last decade. First, the tremendous strength that the all-volunteer force has brought to this fight over the last 10 years and the qualities that they embody. Second, the use of special operations forces and their integral application in modern operations. Third, the contribution of the Guard and Reserve. We used the Guard and Reserve in this era in a way never foreseen, and they performed superbly. I've been to Iraq and Afghanistan many times. I'll be leaving again day after tomorrow. And you can never tell the difference between an active duty and reserve component unit in terms of their proficiency and dedication. Fourth, the fusion of intelligence and operations, an area where we have unrivaled capability. And fifth, new and disruptive technologies, all conceived and fielded over the past decade. This is the legacy of Iraq and Afghanistan that we want to preserve this decade. This is the legacy of Iraq and Afghanistan that we want to preserve and adapt as we turn the strategic corner. Second key tenet of the new strategy has to do with protecting and prioritizing key investments in technology and in new capabilities. President Obama insisted that we go out of our way to protect our newest investments because these kinds of investments tend to have the shallowest roots and are therefore most susceptible to being bureaucratically uprooted. Because these investments are so important to keeping the technological edge, which so much of our national security depends on, the president wanted to ensure that we didn't eat our seed corn in the process of reducing our budget. In this regard, we are continuing, even in our current budgetary environment, to grow our special operations forces. A portion of this somewhat larger force will be redeployed from Iraq and Afghanistan to locations around the world. The remainder, not unimportantly, will have a chance to reset and be home with family, more than they've been able to do over the past decade. Next, we're increasing our investments in cyber in recognition of the growing threat that cyber poses to our national security and critical infrastructure. I said increasing our investments in cyber. Our fiscal year 2014 budget request repurposes and adds manpower to create cyber teams in our three primary functional areas, namely defending Department of Defense networks, degrading adversary cyber capabilities, and supporting the defense of the nation's critical infrastructure. Space, like cyber, is also an area where we have a large installed base upon which we depend, and we need to figure out how we either defend it where that's possible or where it's not possible because of the nature of orbital dynamics and the inherent vulnerability of an object in space, how to operate without it if we need to. We're also developing options to counter the space capabilities of potential adversaries. Another area where the president wanted protected is countering weapons of mass destruction. We still have a non-LUGAR program, and it's very active and operational. We're also investing in intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance platforms. You see the Predators and Reapers at work. You see the Global Hawk, which is the higher altitude platform. Then there are other things you don't see. We have an innovative effort to increase the range of our unmanned vehicles and to operate unmanned vehicles from ships and other areas of innovation in ISR that don't involve unmanned aircraft but other techniques. Finally, we're increasing our investments in certain areas of our science and technology portfolio, such as electronic warfare, anti-jamming capabilities, and command, control, and communications. It's always been the case that the Department of Defense led innovation and contributed to innovation at the national level. Today, there's a larger commercial technology base relative to DoD's than there used to be, and of course, the overall technology base is global. But still in all, there's a leadership role for the Department of Defense. And despite our fiscal challenges, this is an area that will remain a priority. The third key tenet of our new defense strategy concerns our rebalance to the Asia-Pacific region. Our rebalance, to be clear, is predominantly a political and economic concept, not a military one. But since I'm the Deputy Secretary of Defense, I naturally focus on its security aspects. And in the security sphere, the logic of our rebalance is very simple. The Asia-Pacific has largely enjoyed overall peace and stability for 60 years, part, of course, from the Vietnam War. And the only exception to that today, and a dangerous one, is North Korea. We're responding to North Korea's threats. We're doing it by defending ourselves and our allies. We're taking a firm but measured approach. But North Korea is an exception, really the only exception, in terms of imminent nation-state aggression in the Asia-Pacific region. This climate of peace and stability has prevailed in the Asia-Pacific region for so long, despite the fact that there's been no overarching security structure, no NATO, to make sure that historical wounds, which were deep in Asia, were healed after World War II. And during those years, first Japan rose and prospered, then South Korea rose and prospered, then many nations in Southeast Asia rose and prospered, and today India and China rise and prosper.
That's Deputy Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter speaking at the National Press Club yesterday on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. You're hearing it on Pentagon Solutions today, and you'll hear more from Secretary Carter in just a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
It looks like the forecast is calling for a whole new cloud. Brought to you by CenturyLink. Get a visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions with CenturyLink, all built on a global, secure, carrier-grade network. And their custom solutions and support models are designed to enhance your efficiency every day of the week. Let their cloud infrastructure blanket you with security. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
MilitaryByOwner.com. When duty calls, they can help.
During my time in the military, our family has been transferred six times. That's six times we've had to sell or rent our home and find housing near our new duty station. Before our most recent move, my friend recommended we advertise our home on MilitaryByOwner.com. We posted the ad and quickly found a buyer. My wife and I agree, Military by Owner helped make our transition smoother.
Military by Owner. Find, sell, or rent housing near any U.S. military base. Homes advertised by homeowners and real estate agents.
Are you a federal employee or government contractor? FederalNewsRadio.com is the best source for news that helps you do your job better. Our news team brings you the latest on federal pay and benefits, technology, defense, retirement, acquisition, and the federal budget as it's happening. FederalNewsRadio.com gives a voice to the federal community. Read and hear interviews with federal leaders, members of Congress, and industry. Find it all at FederalNewsRadio.com. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our breaking news email alerts.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Shelley Metzenbaum is the former OMB Associate Director for Personnel and Performance.
I think we've really changed the mindset where people treated goals and measurement as something that they needed to do because it was a requirement, to now really using the data to realize a goal is a very powerful and simple and effective shorthand for communicating priorities. It's not punishment, it's about improvement.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Your DOD report brought to you by BAE Systems every weekday afternoon at 40 minutes after the hour. And in this edition of the DOD report, continuing with highlights of a presentation from Ashton Carter, the Deputy Secretary of Defense, at the National Press Club yesterday. In this highlight, Secretary Carter talking about the United States encouraging development in the Pacific region. He says it's a development happening since the end of World War II.
But none of this was a foregone conclusion when you consider where Asia was at the end of World War II. While the Asian political and economic miracle was realized first and foremost by the hard work and talent of the Asian people themselves, it was enabled by the enduring principles that the United States has stood for in the region, and also by American military power. The principles we've stood for have included a commitment to free and open commerce, a just international order that emphasizes rights and responsibilities of nations, fidelity to the rule of law, civilian control of the military, open access by all to the shared domains of sea, air, space, and now cyberspace, and the principle of resolving conflict without the use of force. In addition to these principles, it was also enabled by the pivotal role of U.S. military power and presence in the region. We believe that our strong security presence in the Asia Pacific has provided a critical foundation for these principles to take root. And in one sentence, our rebalance says we're going to continue to provide this foundation for decades to come. Our partners in the region welcome our leadership and our robust engagement and the values that underlie them. And therefore, I believe that our rebalance will be welcomed and will be reciprocated. It's good for us, it's good for everyone in the region, and it includes everyone in the region. And by the way, it's not aimed at anyone in the region, no individual country or group of country. Our rebalance is reflected in force structure decisions, presence and posture, investments, innovations in our operational plans and tactics, and perhaps most importantly, in the work we're doing to strengthen our alliances and partnerships in the region. I've given a number of recent speeches here in town and in Asia that describe each of these lines of effort in significant detail, and in the interest of time, I just refer you to them. Needless to say, there's a lot going into this undertaking. And when I'm asked about the rebalance, I'm usually asked two questions. The first is, can you do it? Can you do it with the budgetary challenges that you face? And the answer to this question is yes, we can do the rebalance, and here's why. First, as I mentioned earlier, we're shifting that huge weight that we have applied to Iraq and Afghanistan to the Asia-Pacific region. And a second reason is that within our budget, which is still substantial, we are making investments in this region a priority. Next, in addition to the current weight of our defense spending, you also have to take into account that it has accumulated over time. It takes decades to build a military capability like ours. And it's also true that in addition to having substantial resources, our force has substantial operational experience, which no other military can match. So for all these reasons, we can do it. And the second question I get is, isn't our rebalance really about China? And the answer is no, our rebalance is not about China. The rebalance is not aimed at anyone, any individual country or group of countries. It's about ensuring the peace and stability that the Asia Pacific has enjoyed for 60 years continues. Now, in a normal budgetary environment, an efficiencies and strategy-driven approach to defense, such as I've described, and which is reflected in the President's budget, would be sufficient. But this budgetary environment is anything but normal, particularly because we're operating under the sequester. Sequester is not only regrettable in its own right, but it distracts from the true strategic and managerial tasks that are upon us. Sequester requires us to subtract from our budget for the remainder of fiscal year 2013, $37 billion. And it presumes that we take equal shares or proportionate shares from each and every part of the budget, which is the worst managerial approach possible. Secretary Hagel and I, and the entire leadership of the department are doing everything we possibly can under this deliberately restrictive law to mitigate its harmful effects on national security. Everything we possibly can. For example, the president used his authority under the law to exempt military compensation from sequestration. We also must, of necessity, fully protect funding for our forces in Afghanistan and other ongoing operations, and we're doing that. It turns out that our Afghanistan war costs have been higher this year than we anticipated, in part because of a higher-than-expected operating tempo, and in part because of increased transportation costs due to the extended closure of the Pakistan ground lines of communication. Next, we're fully protecting Wounded Warrior programs. We're fully protecting our core nuclear deterrent. Critical portions of homeland defense, like the ability to interdict hijacked airliners. Some special operations forces and other critical capabilities. And we're fully protecting key other expenditures, such as those, for example, that will allow school children in our military schools to finish the school year such that their attendance can be fully accredited.
That's Deputy Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter talking about the status of DOD's budget and some of the fiscal challenges they're dealing with because of sequestration. When we come back, you'll hear about force and programs DOD wants to protect from sequestration at all costs from Deputy Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter on Pentagon Solutions on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
Rise above. Lead the charge. Take control. If you work in defense, you live these goals day in and day out. Turn to Deloitte. With our private sector insight and public sector experience, we'll help you deliver more defense with fewer dollars so that the DoD can dominate the business of defense. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
The year was 1930. The epic flight that had made Charles Lindbergh a superstar was in the history books, and the spirit of St. Louis was in the Smithsonian. But Lucky Lindy had his sights on a new challenge, a nonstop flight across the U.S. To accomplish this feat, he needed more than luck. He needed a new plane. For that, he turned to Lockheed, where under his watchful eye, the Lockheed Sirius took shape. In April of that year, with his wife Anne Morrow Lindbergh acting as co-pilot, he took off from Los Angeles and arrived in New York City a mere 14 hours, 45 minutes, 32 seconds later. They'd broken the record by 3 hours. 60 years later, another museum-bound aircraft, Lockheed Martin's SR-71, crossed the country in just over 1 hour and took its place alongside the Spirit of St. Louis. Their stories are our stories. See them unfold at LockheedMartin.com/100 years.
At BAE Systems, we always focus on keeping troops safe. One challenge military pilots face, it's called a brownout. When helicopter pilots confront dust storms or fog, the risk of collision is much higher. That's why we created a technology that lets pilots see terrain and obstacles through these conditions. Knowing our work helps to save lives inspires us every day. We'll be there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at baesystems.com/nextfront.
Sequestration is here, and federal leaders are facing a perfect storm of public scrutiny, increased pressure to perform and reduced budgets, and excellence in government on May 13th and 14th. They will convene federal leaders, managers, and government performance stakeholders at this free educational event to learn the key tactics needed to succeed in today's environment. Join federal colleagues May 13th and 14th in Washington, D.C. to get the ideas you need now to drive high-performance government. Learn more at excellenceingov.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Pentagon Solutions today focused on the comments of Deputy Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter at the National Press Club yesterday. In this highlight, he talks about some areas that the Defense Department wants to protect from sequestration no matter what.
Next, there are things that we're preferentially protecting to the extent possible. First, key features of the new defense strategy, such as the ones I've described. Second, forces forward deployed to the Asia-Pacific and Persian Gulf for possible near-term contingencies. For example, the ability to, as we say, fight tonight if there's aggression on the Korean Peninsula. Third, military family programs. And fourth, certain acquisition efficiencies like multi-year contracts. But we cannot exempt or protect most of our budget. And so you see serious repercussions of sequester appearing as the months go by. Now you might ask, why does this turbulence hit so hard, so fast? Why does an 8% sequester budget cut lead to a crisis in readiness, as the Joint Chiefs of Staff have so aptly called it? To understand this requires some explanation. Sequestration commenced on March 1st, and as I noted, will reduce DOD funding for FY13 by $37 billion. Now, about $20 billion of that $37 billion of cuts affects our operations or O&M, operations and maintenance, or O&M accounts, the accounts that most influence day-to-day military readiness. But it gets worse for O&M. The wartime or OCO budget is also subject to sequestration, and most of this must come from the same O&M accounts. To protect funding for our troops at war, which is a must, we have to impose extra cuts on the base budget portion of O&M. Worse yet, 2 years ago, when we were estimating the costs of wartime operations, we could not foresee the higher than expected operating tempo and transportation of costs that we're experiencing this year. So now we have to make further cuts in base budget O&M in order to sustain wartime operations. So the bottom line is cuts in the base budget portion of O&M will be more than 20% compared to our request. And we have only about 6 months left to accommodate most of these cuts. So much for the 8% sequester cut. We realized last January, before sequester kicked in, that we had potentially large budget problems, and we began taking action then. We imposed hiring freezes, cuts in travel and conferences, reductions in facilities maintenance, and much more. Now that sequester is in effect, we are preparing a request to Congress to move money from other accounts into O&M, called reprogramming. We will be urging Congress to approve that reprogramming quickly. But unfortunately, this won't be enough. Reprogramming will help with much of the wartime O&M funding problem, but by law, reprogramming is limited. And it's not large enough to address the sequester. We will still have to make large cuts in training and maintenance, which in turn are seriously harming readiness. In short, the reprogramming addresses the war costs, but not sequester. And to understand it's the effects of all this, let me start with the Army. Among numerous training-related actions, the Army plans to cancel at least six remaining combat center training sessions for its brigade combat teams. These are the culminating training events, and their cancellation seriously harms readiness. By the end of the fiscal year, excluding deployed units, two-thirds of Army active brigade combat teams, two-thirds, and most of the reserves will be below acceptable readiness levels. This means that we are less ready for contingency operations, and it may interfere with our ability to replace units in Afghanistan next year. The Air Force has or will soon stop all flying for 12 combat-coded squadrons, which means that about one-third of its active squadrons will be markedly less ready to meet contingency demands. The Air Force is also reducing or stopping training at numerous other squadrons. This is not only dangerous, it will also be expensive to repair the damage. Once you lose flying proficiency, it is very expensive and time-consuming to get it back. The Navy and Marine Corps are also cutting back on flight operations and fleet operations. The Navy has imposed flying restrictions on some non-deployed carrier air wings, and as you've seen, we're not sending ships to sea as we had planned.
It's Deputy Defense Secretary Ashton Carter speaking at the National Press Club. A portion of his remarks yesterday. He also took questions from the audience, and you can find the entire presentation later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. This is Pentagon Solutions. Every Wednesday in the 3 o'clock hour, we look at the challenges the Pentagon is dealing with and talk about potential solutions for those challenges. Today, a hearing from Secretary Carter, and we're back with a brand new Pentagon Solutions for you next Wednesday between 3 and 4. On Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. And the next hour of In Depth with Francis Rose is next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com in just a moment.